Two guys in a podcast. We're back. We're blowing up the U. Or actually, we're blowing up the man who blew up the U, right, Greg Doyle?
Something like that. Last couple of podcasts we've done, we've had no guests because it's just not been worth it. Like I am that interesting, and so are you, that we don't need a guest. But we had the chance, and it was your idea, to get Charles Robinson of Yahoo as a guest. Okay, I'm not that interesting. Let's go get him.
Actually, I got to give credit to where it's due. I was at the Wyndham Championship this past weekend, and a guy who works in the triad, Stephen Beck, came up with the idea to email Charles Robinson. So I emailed you. You emailed. I got to give credit where credit's due. But we got Charles Robinson here, so let's talk to him. All right, Charles. So things have been kind of hectic. Before we dive into the meat of your report, I want to ask you about what I feel like was the single best tweet of 2011 so far. I believe you said, and this is about an hour before the Miami stuff really broke, you said, hold on, I think it was something to the lines of, hold on for a second, coming up for air shortly.
Yeah, sit tight.
Yeah, sit tight, coming up for air shortly. I copied that and that entire tweet and your picture and pasted it in an email to all of my friends. I was like, I think this is Miami, and I probably said some expletives because it was so ominous. Was that on purpose?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's unfortunately back in March after the Ohio State stuff, I happened to get on the radio with a good friend here in Chicago, and you know, he asked me, "Oh, you have anything coming down the pipe? You know, the pipeline?" And
right.
I said, "Yeah, I can't talk about that." He said, "Well, you know, just what about on a scale of 1 to 10, if Ohio State, you know, weighs stuff out?" And I said, "Well, you know, if Ohio State's an 8, maybe a 6 or a 7, you know, and then probably a 10 by August." And I should have never said that.
Right.
You know, I was just an absolute. Talk about a moment you regret as a reporter. But from that point on, you know, everyone's asking me, "What's the 10? What's the 10?" And it was literally a question that probably got asked 1,000 times between March and August, and you know, it was nice to just finally be like, okay, finally done with this thing. So it wasn't meant to be ominous, but it was sort of, you know, putting everybody on alert, particularly considering every, you know, at that point a lot of people had speculated that Yahoo was coming on, you know, coming with a story in Miami.
Charles, the thing is that really, you know, your Miami story, it wasn't a 10, it was a 12, it was a 13, it was 10 squared. It was unbelievable. And I've got to ask, and congratulations on that, but I've got to ask you the one newsy question, and if you want to sidestep it, please sidestep it. But are you guys working on another one on Miami? Typically these things come out in stages, or did you swing it all in one big shot?
Well, it's, you know, this isn't anything where we were like, oh, well, you know, we'll drop one and then we'll come with another, nothing like that. But you know how it is. I mean, typically with any story, there's usually follow-up that occurs. So
sure.
We never really put anything down. We're still working on it. But, I wouldn't say there's anything, you know, really planned or anything like that. Nothing, certainly nothing of the scale of the first one. I mean, it was hard enough to keep that thing a secret for as long as we did.
Yeah, and you say you know how it is, and actually I don't know how it is. I've never done anything like what you guys have been doing. You and Wetzel on the Miami thing, you and Wetzel on Ohio State and Tressel, you and Wetzel on Will Lyles at Oregon, you and Jason Cole on Southern Cal football and basketball, and finally, and if I'm leaving one out, the heck with me, but you and Wetzel and Jason King on the Kansas ticket scandal. These are all stories, just some of the biggest stories we've seen in the last couple of years, and you've been on all of them. There's one Yahoo had with Wojtarowski and a couple other guys, and you weren't involved with the UConn one, I think. But anyway, where is this coming from for you personally? Have you always dabbled in this stuff as an investigative reporter, Orlando Sentinel in New Mexico where you were earlier, or is it just come out of nowhere? Are you Jose Bautista, and if so, where are your steroids?
Well, you know, I mean, it's definitely something that I've always enjoyed doing. I mean, you know, going all the way back to college, you know, I was I actually served as an investigative and courts reporter for an entire year at the student newspaper. It's definitely always interested me, you know, the ability to sit down and have a sustained period of time to dig into any given thing. And, you know, you when I graduated, you know, I started covering the NFL, and at that stage, you know, you're 22 years old, you're 23 years old, and you're thinking, wow, you know, I get to cover the NFL. This is fantastic. But it wasn't really anything that ever left me. I still, even on the NFL beat, it was still something that I thought about. And when I transitioned to Yahoo, eventually, as you said, I went through the Orlando Sentinel as an enterprise writer, where I did a lot of long form stuff. you know, I kind of got into that NFL grind after a few years, even though I enjoyed it, it was still something where I was continually going to the bosses saying, hey, you know, can we do more investigative stuff? I'd be interested in it. And there wasn't really time permitting at that point. But once, I think once we kind of dug our heels in with USC, there was, I don't want to say there was a change with the leadership, but I think there was sort of an, people opened their eyes to, okay, we're a boutique. We can't be ESPN. We can't be some of these larger operations. We just don't have the manpower. We can't have the staff size. But there is an ability to set ourselves apart, you know, with investigative reporting just because, you know, finances and a multitude of reasons people were doing, seemed to be like people were doing less of it than ever before. And after USC, I think we, you know, the door was essentially open to us. If you want to do any investigative reporting, you know, go for it. You know, don't worry about the finances. Don't worry about the things you typically have to worry about. And I think really after about 2006, 2007, I started actively saying to my bosses, you know, I want to move off the NFL. I think the investigative beat is really, you know, where I ultimately want to land here. And I think that's, you know, what I want to do. And it took a few years. It took a few years to convince them. But you know, I don't think I've been doing it now, what, probably 14 months since I moved over, 14, 15 months. And I think they're pretty happy with the results.
Are you, yeah, I mean, you know, that Pulitzer you're going to win soon might make him a little bit pleased. But are you comfortable putting a dollar figure on the cost of reporting this story in the ballpark? Or is that a question that I shouldn't ask? And if so, just tell me. I can't tell you that.
You know,
you mentioned the expenditures. I'm just wondering, how much does it cost to go do what you did?
Sure. I don't think we've ever actually sat down and added it up. But, you know, you're definitely talking easily in the tens of thousands of dollars. I mean,
yeah,
you know, just off the top of my head, you know, thinking of the expenses that I filed for going back and forth between here and New Jersey, I mean, that was definitely just those five trips were probably in excess or at least around about $10,000. So you're getting, you know, it's not approaching six digits, but then the funny thing is there are also other investigations that Ohio State wasn't, I mean, that was something reported from my living room. It was simply working a source. North Carolina was another one that we really worked hard, but I never went to Chapel Hill. I worked sources over the phone. So sometimes you can kind of spend a glut of money, and then other times it's literally no cost at all. It's just the ability to use a phone well and be able to, you know where to get documents and not have to travel for certain things.
Well, I mean, I would assume that you know, the ROI on this sort of thing is pretty strong given the linking that's come in, you know, from pretty much every sports site in the country over the past couple of days or weeks, or I guess it's been a, you know, couple of days. But one thing that I thought was interesting, Charles, is that you guys did the player pages this time around, and mm-hmm. and you guys had a, not to laugh at it, but you had a graphic ready, like when the Miami bombshell dropped. So it seems like this is something that the sports department at Yahoo as a whole is, I mean, is there a budget out for, do you guys have your own, you know, separated section where you and Wetzel hang out and drink coffee and laugh at the beat guys, or
espresso?
Yeah, sip espresso and laugh at the guys who have to cover like silver.
Well, we definitely, they've carved out an investigative team now. So it's like myself, Dan, you know, we've got a guy by the name of Rand Getlin who's come on
who was, what was his Twitter handle before he came?
He used to run Synergy Sports.
That's right.
And you know, he's got a legal background, and he's, you know, he does a lot of great research and has definitely been great for us on the reporting end. So then on top of that, it's really myself, Dan, and Rand, and then my editor, Jerry Ahern, and anyone else who kind of wants to step in if they have an investigative story that they kind of, you know, if they want help on it, or if they feel like a team operation will work better, sort of like Jason King in the Kansas ticket scandal. That was a similar situation where it was something that Jason King was the person with the initial tip. And then, you know, it was, okay, let's the three of us, myself, Jason King, and Dan Wetzel, let's see how quickly we can cover ground on this. So there's no doubt they've carved out sort of that department and the funds, and it's a dedicated spot where a few years ago it was just sort of shoestring. You did it in your spare time. You did it with, you know, whatever funds, travel funds you had, and that was it. But now it's definitely switched into a more, you know, rigid, structured sort of department.
readers can reach out to us now so many different ways, Twitter, emails, they can get on your Facebook page if you have one. Given that, what has been the reaction from Miami fans? And if you don't mind, you know, compare it to, because again, as I mentioned earlier, you've done this and been part of doing this to several schools, and I'm sure all the fan bases are upset at you. How does Miami's upsetness compare to other schools? What's it been like, and have there been any death threats?
It's been off the charts. I mean, it's been even with USC, there was a, you know, there was a lot of venom, you know, some very vitriolic reactions, but I think, you know, Miami probably takes the cake. Yeah, and, you know, there's been the emails, you know, don't show up in Dade, you won't leave Dade, you know, don't,
jeez.
You know, I mean, it's, which isn't, you know, you kind of, you take it with a grain of salt, but it's, I think what I would compare it to is, I remember going through the USC process, and it was sort of the same amount of content as Miami, but it was spread out over 4.5 years. So it almost felt like you were waterboarding your audience instead of, you know, just kind of dropping it all at once. And I had forgotten that over that 4-year span, every time we would write a story, people would come out of the woodwork to discredit it and say, you know, your source this and, or that's not right, or this isn't right. With Miami, you kind of drop it, and the overwhelming reaction has been people trying to poke holes in your story. You know, this is wrong, that's wrong. You know, you find that you get websites that kind of gerrymander some of the facts of the story. It's been unfortunate because, you know, some journalists who I consider peers and esteemed journalists have kind of engaged in some of these websites and said, hey, this looks credible, when in reality it's not credible. And if they would have reached out to me, I would have said, look, here's the deal. Here's why this is incredible, but that's okay. And
I will, Charles, I will name them. Dan Le Batard and Jason Whitlock. And Whitlock's on Twitter. He's just parroting, hey, everybody, look what they're writing about the Yahoo stuff. It's not any good. See, here's a retweet. He's not actually saying it himself. He's just retweeting. And then, of course, Le Batard wrote his column. And I don't expect you to go after them, and I'm not really going after them necessarily. I'm just saying I've seen it too, and it's real depressing. It used to be, it was the holy grail of sports writing was to have a story like what you had, the kind you've been having. And lately, there's been some people, those two in particular, who are saying, well, Yahoo's just the investigative arm in the NCAA, and shame on Yahoo, and blah, 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 blah. It's ironic because 5 years ago, everybody wanted the kind of stories you're doing. And now right. That Yahoo, and you, but Yahoo owns this beat, everyone's now saying, oh, these are stories that shouldn't be done because it's, I mean, it's just nonsense.
It's been, you know, it's difficult to deal with that kind of stuff, but We know, you know, we it's funny because we've actually had meetings, you know, before releasing a story saying, hey, look, you know, there's going to be a lot of blowback. There's going to be a lot of negativity. Just sustain. We know we're right. We're fine. Stay the course. And that's kind of where we are with Miami. There's the issue that fans don't really ever understand. And I would think journalists would understand. And that's what bothers me is when you write a story like this, you never know what's outside of the picture that makes the picture. You know, sometimes it's what you leave out of the picture that actually makes it. We're protecting a lot of people. No one understands our sources. They don't understand what we've gotten in the course of interviews. And, you know, so they make a lot of assumptions that simply, you know, there's a lot of this talk, well, oh, geez, it's only one source. We have no idea how good that source is. And, you know, it's disappointing. And it, like yesterday was a perfect example. I get a call from the Miami Herald that says, hey, Tyrone Moss just said, you know, the one player who allowed himself to be quoted in the story and admitted taking benefits from Shapiro, he's now saying he never even spoke to you. And I'm sitting there thinking, we did a taped interview with him. He knows we taped it. and on top of that, he sent us text messages that night about his quotes. And I'm just sitting there like, is this really happening? So I literally burned an entire day yesterday, you know, going back and forth with the Herald reporter and finally getting to the point where I'm like, okay, look, the quotes there in the story, I'm going to play you the tape so you can hear his voice. She knew Tyrone Moss. She knew exactly what he sounded like. I played the tape immediately. She said, yeah, that's Tyrone. And I understand why he did it. It's because his entire life, and this is something that he told us before he decided to say he never spoke to us, his entire life's been turned upside down by fans, and he's doing anything he can to keep his head above water. But we wasted an entire day because you had one outlet, Channel 10, which just ran the story and never even, you know, thought, hey, let's call and see if the interview actually did take place. Thank God the Herald called us, which is interesting to say because we're competing with them right. on this story, and yet we're now playing them interviews, which, frankly, we have never done ever in the history of my you know, working on these stories. And it's unfortunate to have to burn a reporting day on furthering
Charles, you're competing. Sorry, but you're competing with the story. Kind of like Georgia Tech was competing with Cumberland College the day that Georgia Tech beat Cumberland 222-0. Sorry, I know that's me saying that. I know you can't say that, and you'd never even agree with that. But I'm just—I find it funny that it's charming that you would say we're competing with the Herald. No, no, you're not competing with the Herald. That was a 3-second knockout. They're done.
They're scrambling to get back to get anywhere near where you guys are. Charles, you mentioned death threats. A lot of I think I read that several times in the story where you guys were protecting sources because they were too worried about what might happen to them if they used their name.
Right.
It seemed like more than normal though.
Believe me, going into this, everyone understood, particularly most every source we talked to knew the full range and breadth and depth of what Nevin Shapiro had been doing. And they knew when this comes out, this is going to be – I think they almost had a better grasp on what the impact would be in South Florida than even we did. And right. Believe me, there was an effort made always to get people to go on the story with their names. But, for example, other players were like, hell no. Like, there's no way you can put – and these are players who, frankly, through the course of the months that, I spent talking to these players, you wean them, you talk to them, and you get them to finally say, you know what? Yes, it did happen. Yes, I was with Nevin. You have a lot of players who are talking about exactly right. what occurred, and they won't put their name on it. And then what happens to Tyrone Moss, I think, is a perfect example of why sources with valuable information are so afraid to be put out in the public light, to all of a sudden be in the light, because they're so afraid of what the recourse is going to be from fans and then even other players. Because remember, it's the U. We're a family. It's the U. It's not even the name of the university. It's the U. We go there in the summer. We work out. Those guys all are – there's a lot of fear internally from those guys, from other guys in the group.
What patience, Charles, the story required, and I marvel at it because I really need the daily or every couple of days feeling of our own story, it's done. I've accomplished something, and I see a byline, and there it is. Now I can move on. And I'm guessing you were writing some other stuff, but I don't know. That's what I wanted to find out from you. You were reporting this for 11 months, and you knew there'd be a payoff, but still, like I could never work for Sports Illustrated or a monthly magazine. I couldn't. I'm not mature enough. How do you handle going 10 or 11 months before the payoff, A, and B, how much would you say you wrote on anything else? Do you have a number of bylines you've contributed in the last 10 months while you were reporting this thing too?
It can't be many. I still had a Sunday NFL column that I was doing from home last season, so that, at least that was good because it broke up, as you said, a little bit of the monotony that occurs with, going through documents every single day. And it's nice to take a break and have one day where you're, essentially, it breaks up the monotony, having that column every Sunday. Now, I probably had, even with those NFL columns, which is, 16, 17 weeks of the season, less than 25 bylines, during the year that we were working on this. Now, that said, we broke Ohio State. We broke a couple of Oregon stories. There were some other pieces here and there that I was working on, and I had to shelve some things, actually, to finish the Miami story. But it is definitely challenging, and that was the one thing that was the biggest adjustment, going from the NFL where you're writing on that daily or weekly basis to a beat where you can disappear for months at a time. And, not only is there sort of the thought, what are my peers thinking about me right now because I'm not writing for months, but also what if this doesn't pay off? What if this doesn't, come to fruition? It's definitely a mental – there are a lot of mental hurdles that I don't think I realized until I was really in the midst of the job every day.
And without asking you if it's a 5 or a 6 or a 10 or whatever, and maybe you don't want to talk about it, but is there anything else out there? And again, I wouldn't ask you to name the school. So Arkansas, no, not name the school, but
right.
Do you have your fingers closing in on some other program too, or are you kind of taking a break right now?
there were things that were shelved, to finish. I remember when I took this job, I remember literally the first couple of days I was sitting there thinking, am I going to have enough to work on with this? Like, what am I going to do? Like, I'm not going to have enough to do. And within 2 weeks, I had so many tips and so many things to sort through that, you know, it's just never ending. So yeah, you know, I mean, we're always working on stuff. I'm not taking a break. You know, I tried to take 2 days off. Unfortunately, yesterday was supposed to be one of those 2 days. And it's just kind of back into the grist mill now. But, you know, it's fine. It's part of the job, and you know, you enjoy it. And hopefully we can try to live up to, or, you know, live up to the standard that everyone seems to think we've set.
All right, Charles, we don't want to keep you too long, and so we'll get you out of this. Greg and I ranked the other day the various schools. It's actually we pretty much just went through your author archive and just listed the schools that were there. But it rank in terms of, if you got Oregon, you've got Ohio State, you've got Carolina, and you've got now Miami. Rank in terms of, and USC too. Can you rank them from most scandalous to least scandalous? Is that asking too much? Or
no, you know, I mean, it's the thing about USC is I know this story gets a lot of attention. There's a lot of talk about death penalty. I don't know how legitimate that will really be at the end of the road. But I think USC will always be different because it's a situation where all of a sudden you saw, for the first time in history, a Heisman Trophy is forced to be returned. You know, you have, for the first time in history, at least a portion of the national title was stripped from a school. I know it was only two guys, you know, in Reggie Bush and O.J. Mayo, but I don't know that you can get much bigger than having to give back what, at least from the public vantage point, is the most prestigious college trophy out there and a share of a national championship. So regardless of what happens with Miami, we're still talking about a period of years where there was no championship. There really was no Heisman Trophy, you know, and it's, to me, those are the kinds of things that stick in people's minds. And you know, now who knows what's going to happen at the end of this, you know, NCAA investigation. But to me, I don't know if I could rank the rest, but I could say that in my mind, USC, because of the ramifications of those two things being stripped, that will always sort of rank to me as one of the ones that sticks out.
It's fascinating to think that, and you know, it's the first. It really broke the mold. Well, Charles, thanks again for joining us on the podcast. Excellent work as always, and we look forward to the next one. unless it's my school.
Well, I appreciate the time, guys. You know, you can reach out to me anytime. Anytime anybody wants to get me on and not tell me that I'm a scumbag, I'm always happy.
Well, when you're always at most, you're the second biggest scumbag. Always, so that's always. Although I'm not breaking squat to be called a scumbag. Way to go, Charles! Impressive job, and thanks for coming on with us.
All right, thanks, guys.
What about that guy, Will? I didn't get a sense at all that he's bursting with pride. Although he's got to be, he simply has to be. He is, I mean, he's the biggest media star in sports writing right now. He's it, and he's earned it. It's not like, well, he wasn't born on third base and thought he had a triple. He went out and, you know, legged out a triple and head first, cloud of dust, and yet he doesn't sound impressed with himself at all.
I think that was more like a stand-up triple, but yeah, he, I mean, he was. I mean, but he incredibly humble because I would be. I don't want to think what I would be acting like if I were him. That being said, you kind of get the sense that he might be a guy that doesn't really like the attention, and maybe that's why he likes investigative reporting. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because as I was telling him, I couldn't do what he does. First of all, I mean, I couldn't break the stories. I'm not good enough to do what he does. But even if I was good enough, I don't know that I would have the maturity to sit back and be out of the spotlight, for lack of a better word, not writing. You get used to the rhythm of writing, and you're in the paper every day or the website or whatever, and you see your work. It's not so much about, well, people see my name and isn't that great every day. It's not that. It's more like it's like building a house. If you build a house a day, all of a sudden you don't build a house for 6 months. There's nothing to show for your work. You're stacking bricks and no one can see them. He stacks those bricks, nobody can see them, and it does require a certain amount of humility. That I don't have, no.
And the patience, too. I mean, that's why I'm better at doing stuff like really fast, snarky blog entries than I am necessarily at writing longer pieces, because my patience is even shorter than yours. Like, I want to process this thing in an hour and be done with it. And I mean, so, yeah. I mean, like, I can write the longer stuff, but I mean, it's a different mindset. And you know, you heard Charles talk about his bylines. Like, I went back and looked at it. I think he might be even overstating it. I think his the previous byline that wasn't Ohio State or Oregon was January 16th, 2011 was his last NFL byline.
That is crazy. And
yeah,
there's always this talk of, you hear it especially from sports writers in the business, but you might even hear from people outside the business, is it, and it's not even about sports, it's any kind of reporters. Reporters should not make the news, they should report the news. But in a case like this guy and that whole Yahoo machine and Wetzel, not to leave Dan Wetzel out, I mean, Robinson has been in, I think has been more than Wetzel, but it's close. Wetzel's been in almost all these two, and I mean, that guy pound for pound, you know, as far as great writer, great reporter, as good as it gets. But those guys make the news as they report the news, because without those guys, Reggie Bush right now has a Heisman Trophy. Without those guys, Miami is not thinking about the death penalty. Miami's thinking about a season opener. I mean, without those guys, these stories don't come to light. It's kind of a baffling thing to even think about, but that's the truth.
Yeah, and it was interesting too, though, but it's not like, you know, we mentioned Levitard and Whitlock on the podcast with Charles. The interesting thing with Levitard, all right, so if Levitard was, let's flip this, and this is Levitard who did this, and I know that's not what he does, but let's say he's the investigative reporter who got this news. Well, he would literally be the news because ESPN would push him out there every 30 seconds to talk about it. Every 30 seconds he would be on ESPN, and his face would be there. But with Charles, like, the only time you see his face is either on on his Twitter avatar or on, like, have you seen the Scarface GIF, by the way?
No.
You haven't seen the Scarface GIF? It's amazing. LSU Freak, who works with Spencer Hall, does it. It's the scene where Pacino is in a shootout, and remember the dude comes up from behind with the shotgun?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, the guy is taken, instead of Pacino's face, it's the Miami Duck mascot, and the guy on the shotgun is Charles Robinson's face. And I can't believe I didn't ask about that. I should have. But it's the greatest thing of the entire way. He walks up and just shoots the Miami Duck into the pool. I'll link it in the post because it truly is artistic genius. But, you know, I mean, he's become this, like, school killer. I don't want him getting near NC State, and yet I don't think anybody really knows what he looks like, which is weird in today's world.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. He'd be on TV all the time if he was on ESPN. If he says he's working on stuff and always has – what's scary is that he says there's always tips coming in. He thought for a while he wouldn't have enough stuff to do to justify his 40-hour-week existence, and now
right.
It sounds like he's got more than enough. And the thing is that this becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and believe me, they've earned every bit of it. But once you become known as the site that breaks news and kills, you know, teams or programs or whatever, whenever there's a disgruntled booster out there, disgruntled parent right. of a player, disgruntled somebody, and they're like, I want to, you know, that school wronged me or my son or my father or whoever wronged. I want people to know about this. Well, the first thing you think of is Yahoo
yeah.
and Charles Robinson and also Dan Wetzel, too. And that's what you think of. So they have earned the right to turn their umbrella upside down, and it's just raining scandals, and it's just going to get easier and easier for them, and they don't need it easy. It's the thing. They can do it hard, but it's about to get easier for them, and I'm just so happy for those guys because they're not. You heard the guy. Wetzel's the exact same way. So
yeah.
humble. I've talked to Wetzel behind the closed doors, you know, but privately, and he is not impressed with himself at all. And man, is that an impressive character trait. I wish I had it.
Well, the weird thing about these guys too, and I don't think that Charles was on the death to the BCS. But he didn't write that with them, did he? I know it was Wetzel.
I don't believe so, no.
It was like Wetzel and Passan and Cole, maybe. Or maybe just Passan and Wetzel. But either way, there seems to be a lot of true passion from these guys in actually correcting the college game. Do you get that sense, too? And I think that Charles is – I'm just thinking here. I don't know this, obviously. But I get the sense that Charles's passion is investigating and doing the dirty work that's involved. You know, this is why great lawyers are really good at lawyering, because they like to get into the details of legal cases. Well, that's what
– Yeah, what you're saying brings up the whole other side issue is you've got people, you know, like Levitard in Miami. And the thing is, back in the early 90s when he was – I mean, he was the original young stud sports writer, and he's still
right.
very talented. I'm not trashing Levitard. He was in college at Miami, 20 years old, full-time student, and covering Miami as a beat for the Miami Herald and breaking stuff that was getting Miami in huge trouble in the early 90s. So he was
working at the Herald when he was a student at Miami? That's
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, look, you can tell how much talent he has. He was that good. I mean, he was remarkably good. It's incredible. But the thing is that now it's someone else is writing this stuff. Someone else is breaking stories. And breaking stories, I will add, with better sources on the record more than what Levitard used to break. And now he's going the other way and saying, oh, no, circumstantial evidence is not real evidence, which, of course, absolutely it is. Circumstantial evidence might not be compelling enough for you, Dan, but it's real evidence. But you got Whitlock retweeting people. He's obviously eager to poke holes in Yahoo. And Whitlock has called Yahoo several times in columns, the investigative arm of the NCAA. And people act like that's a problem. To get back to your point, they act like that's a problem that Robinson or Wetzel and the other guys apparently, and I don't even know if they feel this way or not, but they certainly report like they do, that they're helping, you know, righting some wrongs and cleaning up some messes, or at least exposing the wrongs out there. And people in our business are going to say, no, you shouldn't be doing that? Huh? I mean, that makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I don't get that. I mean, like, is I don't understand, is Whitlock criticizing Yahoo, or is he criticizing the NCAA? Because I think there's definitely a fair criticism of the NCAA. It's like, hey, why don't you guys just hire Charles Robinson and not suck so bad at your jobs?
Well, no, now here's the thing, and here's what, like, when Whitlock and Levitard and even that comment you just made, when things like that come out, it lacks, and I know you understand, but it lacks a perspective that's important. The NCAA's job is to not be the cop out there walking a beat looking for criminals. Their job is that our schools are on the honor system. It's like you're at the Ivy League school. You're on the honor system. When you guys break a rule, you let us know. We will come in, look around, see how bad it is, and tell you what we think. Their job is not to be Charles Robinson and to get tips and to go break stuff. That's not what they do. And so it's really intellectually dishonest for other reporters, like the two we've mentioned, to act like it's a problem that Yahoo has to do the dirty work for the NCAA. NCAA doesn't do the dirty work. They let usually the school, if the school is not scummy, will do the dirty work for them. But
that's a good point, because I mean we're talking about issues at hand with schools. Let's talk about Miami and Carolina, where the power structure in the fan base has overrun to a degree the power structure in the infrastructure of the athletic department, because, like, I mean, that's why Butch Davis hung around so long, because boosters were like, we'll pull our money. And, you know, that's why this Miami stuff was going on. You had a booster gone wild. And I see your point. I mean, that's not, I mean, Miami should be doing its job in the first place. They clearly weren't doing their job and doing their due diligence. But, you know, at the same time, I mean, the NCAA, I don't know. I feel they could be doing a better job in certain instances. You said yourself, they don't want to go out and kill off a program, because if they do, that program's out of there. So, you know, I mean, they could lay the hammer down on a couple schools, and that might make people treat them with a little more respect.
Right, and I think they absolutely should put the hammer down on Miami, because the 64 to 80, whatever the final number of big BCS size schools, and for example, Boise State's not in the BCS right now, but I think if the 64 to 70 schools break away from the NCAA, as their ultimate goal is to do, I think Boise would probably be part of that mix. So I don't need to exclude non-BCS schools, but it's mostly BCS schools. If they're going to break away, they're going to break away eventually, whether Miami is a tipping point because Miami gets a death penalty or not. So I say, look, it's going to happen, NCAA. So in the meantime, do your job to the best of your ability and give the death penalty what's deserved. And about that, you know, the ultimate end game is for these six BCS leagues to kind of form four super conferences. The Big 12 would go away. Probably the Big East would go away. You have four super conferences, and they'd break away and keep all the money for themselves, and they wouldn't need NCAA anymore. They'd form their own little overseeing committee. The irony is that let's say Miami gets death penalty effective 2012.
Sure.
For 3 years. Well, if these schools break away before then, the death penalty is gone, because the death penalty only applies to the NCAA. I mean, Miami could break away with everybody else and compete on the football field right away.
Right.
So that's – anyway, all that to say that NCAA, if you're a parent and your kid is naughty, you spank him. You spank him right then, and you don't worry about the kid running away from home. You deal with the here and now, not the what if. The here and now is Miami ought to be spanked.
Yeah, and you know what? I'll give credit to the NCAA, because I think that they do a pretty good job of actually working roguely in a, or in a rogue fashion. They're very quiet about their investigation.
Covertly
was actually the word I was scrambling for my thesaurus. But yeah, no, I mean, I think they tend to do a decent job of, like, the Cam Newton stuff. They're like, yeah, we've actually been looking at this for months. We have all this stuff piled up. We know about all this. Once it breaks, they've already got something there. They're looking around. They just don't, they don't flaunt it. You know, it's not like a, they, you know, they don't announce the investigation until late. I think the tactics of the NCAA could be better.
I think it's probably hard for them to get the trust of certain people, because at the end of the day, no matter how smooth and charming you are as an NCAA investigator, you're still the man. You're the man, and you're dealing with people that might not want to deal with the man. Charles Robinson comes in, or Dan Wetzel, or whatever, and they're not really the man. They're reporters, and it's just different. There's a different inherent likability that they don't lack, that NCAA investigators lack, because it's like an IRS agent. You start sniffing around. It doesn't matter if my neighbor is been ripping off the government for $1,000 a year on his tax refunds. An IRS guy coming to my door, I'm not real impressed with you, because one day you might come after me. So I'm not going to help you, but I'll help Charles Robinson.
No, I agree. Hey, but you know what I want to touch on? I'm really pissed I didn't ask him this.
Yeah.
Is that Nevin Shapiro claimed in the article he never had sex with any prostitutes. I know that's going in a totally different direction, aside from the IRS prostitution connection. But seriously, he said that he's like a 5'9".
No. He's 5'5". But listen,
5'5". Yeah.
The way Nevin Shapiro clearly is a jock sniffer, what I think you're missing out, I'm not sure. I think he got enough.
Think he got off on hanging with athletes?
Yeah, I think he got a release, and Buzz Bissinger wrote just a brutal takedown of UM in the last day or two, saying Miami ought to get the death penalty, and I don't mean for 2 years. He says Miami football ought to be just done away with forever.
It's actually not a bad idea.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, because there's such a blight on humanity. And he never thought about this, but he described Nevin Shapiro as having almost psychosexual, getting off psychosexually from hanging around these famous athletes and stuffing their pockets with money and – you know, and it's kind of a weird thing, but I mean, everybody's different, you know, and that might be what did it for him.
I mean, no, it's cool to hang with athletes. I just don't think that
it's not that cool.
I mean, yeah,
it's just not that cool. It's not. Someone like me is definitely not the right person to ask, because I have the opportunity, if I want,
to
see these guys in the locker room, clubhouse, whatever. And so it's easy for me to say I take it for granted, but it's just not that cool. Those guys are regular human beings. And in a lot of cases, they're not good human beings. And in a lot of cases, they're not very clever human beings. And it's just, why do you think I want to hang out with a bunch of 19-year-old, raw, unpolished people? I want to hang out with them just because they can run real fast or block real well at offensive tackle or throw the football, whatever. I mean, it's just embarrassing that Nevin Shapiro, there's a lot of those people out there, are out there.
No. If he were like in any other, you know, I don't want to say business, because it is a business, but it's not a business. If he were in any other like walk of life, he'd be scrutinized for being like a pedophile.
Yeah, I mean, his interest as an older guy in younger, and luckily for him, in the comparison you're talking about, everybody I'm sure is over 18, so
right.
You don't have to worry about it. But yeah, there's something wrong. I mean, there's something wrong with a guy that needs to be liked by
19-year-olds.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they're not. I mean, older boys. They're not quite young men. I guess they might be young men if they're 18, I suppose. But there's something strange about that guy, and obviously, and he's a criminal and a felon and all that. But what I find amazing is that people are poking holes or trying to in the Yahoo story. And they're basically saying that, you know, Nevin Shapiro's not trustworthy, the Ponzi scheme and all that. You know, they've got the alleged scumbag admitting to his scumbaggery, making himself look worse and worse by the hour.
Right.
And they're also backing it up with some form of something. Do they have video camera of Nevin Shapiro getting a prostitute for whoever he got a prostitute? No, they don't have that on video. And if that's your burden of proof, okay, sorry, then you're right. Yahoo can never prove it at that level. But at some point, people, unless you were on the O.J. Simpson jury, you know what? The glove fits.
No, look, it's the thing is that, first of all, Levitard's a Miami alumni. I don't care whether he was busting up the university back in the day or not. If you're an alumni of the school and you're arguing against the report, then you have inherent bias, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, let me say this real quick. He's also and I used to like him a whole lot, and now I don't hardly ever see him ever and don't talk to him, so I, you know, seen to here and there, but I mean, I worked at the Miami Herald for 3 or 4 years and looked up to him, and I mean, he's an incredible talent, but he's also the same guy that went after me pretty hard when I went after LeBron James for shrinking the NBA Finals. At some point, when all you're doing is defending your local institutions, right, you're defending Miami against outsiders, then you are a homer, especially when you're wrong. And he was wrong about LeBron, and I think he's wrong about Yahoo's reporting not being really good. So if you're defending your locals and you're wrong doing it, then you are by definition a homer.
Didn't he tweeted something like, when the Big Three got together, he tweeted something like rings in Miami, or I mean, he's like, I mean, look, yeah, I mean, he's a homer. He doesn't, I mean, but that's okay. That's part of his shtick now. But you don't get to poke holes in reporting that rips on, you know, Miami. If you're a Miami grad, you live in Miami, and you are just tremendously pro Miami. Whitlock's a whole different ball game, and I just think he's.
I'd prefer not spend a whole lot of time talking about him.
Frankly. Yeah, me either. We're wasting our airwaves. Anyway, actually, we filled up our airwaves. But,
all right. Well, this is a highlight. We've had several shows, and I've loved them all. But this is my favorite because Charles Robinson was that good, and he was that nice and that humble. Again, humble. He is on track to win a Pulitzer. I don't care what anybody says. He's the leader in the clubhouse, and you would never know that's who we were just talking to.
You would not know that. But you would know that if you subscribed via iTunes, which you can do by clicking the little link above where it says play. My segues are always great. Don't forget to check us out at facebook.com/CBS Sports for Wilbur. I'm Will Brinson, and this has been Two Guys in a Podcast. Thanks as always, Greg.
All right, bye.